Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule, it's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to. Today's book that I'm reviewing is by an author who is new to me and I think generally quite a new author. I think this is her first novel. Her name is Becky Chambers and it's one of those Kickstarter novels. So she obviously had a following from some of her other work. It says about the author here, she worked as a freelancer between 2010 and 2014 as a writer. Her work appeared on the MarySueTour.com, which is a science fiction website, 5 out of 10, which I don't know, and The Toast, which I have heard of. I don't think I read very much of it. Anyway, so obviously got a follower for her non-fiction writing. She put it up on Kickstarter and was like, hey, I've got a novel idea and I want to finish it. Who thinks I should do it? And that's, to be honest, all I know about it. But it was a successful Kickstarter campaign. So the reason I'm reading this is because it was recommended to me, not just by one person, but a few people, on Goodreads.com. Now, if you want me to read a book and review a book that you want, that you read or want to hear my opinion on, you could just like send me an email and saying, hey, read this, or Twitter or something like that. Goodreads is good as well because there's often links to the books right there. But the best way that's happened with this book is if you go to the SFBRP listener group on Goodreads, and you say, hey, I think you should read this book, Luke. And other people say, I also think you should read it. Generally, if a few people all pile on and say, yeah, read this book, I'll generally get to those books quicker than others. And that's what happened in this case. Although people said, oh, it's not a very good story. You might not like it. I reckon it's not the kind of book for Luke. But I thought, well, okay, I'm going to give it a go. A new author, self-published, or maybe is it self-published? I don't know. If it was kickstarted, hodder.co.uk. Oh, so I guess it's been picked up by Hodder and Sorton, a Hachette UK company. So yeah, it has been properly published as well, whatever that means, because I bought it as a Kindle ebook, so it doesn't really matter if it's self-published or not. It came across my radar, and so this is a book which is set generally in the future, and the setup is this, that In the future, us humans have fucked up the planet Earth, and so we're going, right, let's get out of here. Rich people went to Mars and set up their own civilization on Mars, and then other people who were trying to get out decided, well, we're not going to go to Mars, we're just going to head out, not to Saturn, we're just going to head out towards the stars in generation ships, and this was called the Exodus Fleet, or the Exodons, or I think the people on the Exodus Fleet were called the Exodons, and they ran into some aliens, kind of accidentally, it seemed like that, but these aliens had this kind of group of, like a civilization built out of lots of different alien species called the Galactic Commons, and different kinds of different kind of aliens called the Hrafgrunas and the Andrisk and the Olans and the Smirgmans and things like that. And the Galactic Commons is kind of connected by a few different kind of technologies, communication technologies. There's these wormholes, which is important for this book. You've got ansibles, which are just generally long distance, fast and light communications, but only kind of radio stuff, only information by ansible. You've got faster than light drives, but you don't use them very much because they're really too dangerous. For small things, you can do package deliveries on these little postal things, which I think is quite fun. And you can stick a human in a little coffin shaped thing who is in stasis. They can be dragged along at faster than light. But anything bigger than that, any like larger ship, more comfortable ship, is too dangerous. So they don't let many people do faster than light. And so there's this way of setting up wormholes. By this wormhole boring kind of machine, tunneling, they call it tunneling, spaceships who have these tunneling machines. And what they do, they have this kind of two like sides of a cage, I think it's called. It's a bit wishy-washy, but you know, they go into it a bit at the start of the book that there's a cage and you leave one end of the cage at one point and then you take the kind of other end of the cage and you drag it to where you want to go, and then a special ship can bore back between the two sides of the cages. And so there's like a gate at either end and something has to bore between them. And to do this, you need a special kind of ship and you need a special boring machine thing on the ship. And you need someone who can navigate via, let's just call it subspace. And there's one kind of alien who can do that. So in some ways, it felt a bit like the Navigators from the Dune world. It's like, oh, these people, yes, they're the only ones who can do it. I mean, there's, you know, the idea has been used in lots of different science fiction in the past, where there'll be one species who is good at navigating another species, which is good at piloting and things like that. And that's what we have here. So What we do, what this book is about one of these tunneling ships called the Wayfarer. And the Wayfarer, the book is about the crew of the Wayfarer and their mission. And so we got Ashby, who is a human captain, and this book starts off with Rosemary, and she's like the new bookkeeping kind of person who is brought on board to get all the finances in order, and she's a translator and she does all the bookkeeping and things like that. And then you've got Kizzy, who is a scatterbrained, very bubbly human technician, and then you've got another human technician, but he's like a little person. He's a dwarf. I don't know. Is it Tyrion Lannister or whatever his name is? Lannister? Lancaster, whichever one it is. So like a small character, and then there's another human called Corbin, and he is in charge of. It's weird. There's different. It seems to be different kind of fuel sources that are used. There's ambi fuel, which is kind of weird, kind of dark matter, but not really dark matter. Wasn't quite sure what that was, but there's a fuel source which they harvest from around black holes and nebula called ambi. But then on the ship itself, it's powered. However it goes along, it's powered by the biological byproduct fuels. So it's got all these I don't know, whatever they are, amoebas, I don't know, creating some kind of fuel, and a guy called Corbin, who is a bit of an asshole, he looks after that. And then you've got some alien species as well on board. You've got Sizzix, who is an Andrisk, which is a bit like a lizard with feathers. And she's the pilot. And then you've got Dr. Chef, who is both a doctor and a chef, and he's a big kind of, let's just say, a big... well, the way he's described is, like, you know, those water bears, those little tiny things, but like a big one of them. So he's got like a thing and six legs and hands and things. And Ohan, which is this alien with a symbiotic relationship with some kind of virus which takes over them. And they refer to themselves in the collective third person, or they refer to as a collective. So it's not just one person, even though it is just one body. He is referred to as they. So they, Ohan, they did this and they did that. And we do this and that kind of stuff. And then you've got the artificial intelligence called Lovelace, shortened to Lovey. And that's it. That's the captain. That's the team that we got together. And as we were getting to know these, like in the first few chapters of the book, I was like, wow, this feels very familiar in a way that, you know, that you just start off like this. And it's like, oh, well, there's a cast and they're on a ship and they do these jobs. And some of them are a little bit criminal but they're not really criminal, but they hang out with some people who might be criminal and they have to do trading stops and delivering things and things like that. And I was just a little bit too Firefly. Not that that's a bad thing. I enjoy Firefly. But it is one of those times when you just go, oh, this is a bit strange. It's a bit like when I was watching, when I watched the fourth Alien movie, Alien Resurrection. And I was like, wow, this crew is a bit, you know, it's a bit, this feels a bit like Firefly. Actually, I saw that before I watched Firefly, but when I went back and watched it again, I was like, oh, this is very Firefly-like. Then I found out that Josh Whedon wrote the story for that, or came up, well, was definitely worked on the script for that fourth Aliens. You're like, ah, okay. So that's why you have, you know, like the quirky technician and the male captain and the female pilot or whatever, you know, whatever it goes around. I mean, I'm not saying that it's a one-to-one match with Firefly, but it felt like almost too coincidental that so many of the ideas and plot points, which at one point is like, oh, there's this wizard, there's this amazing hacker guy, and I'm like, oh, that reminds me of the amazing hacker guy Mr. Universe in Firefly. And then he said, he's so good, he's even got his own asteroid. And I was like, isn't that exactly like Firefly? Don't they go to meet him and he's got his own asteroid or nebula or wherever Mr. Universe hangs out at? Maybe I'm getting the names wrong, but a few times. And it got to the point where they're like, oh, we're looking for a big job, like, what's the big job? And I'm like, okay, this is either going to be a train job or they're going to transport cows. And because that's I wrote that in my status update on Goodreads. And but it turns out, no, that's not their job. Their job is literally they've got to go on a long trip to a small angry planet. And I was like, oh, really? That's what I thought that would be like a byproduct. Like when you look back at the story, you're like, oh, wow, that turned out to be, it wasn't expected it to be, but it turns out that was a really long trip. And when they got there, everyone was really angry. But it turns out they're told right at the very start, hey, you're going to take a really long, it's going to take a really long trip to get there. It's like over a year or over a galactic standard year or whatever that is. And when you get there, everyone's going to be really angry because there's this new, oh, this is the thing, there's this new alien civilization, which they've known about for a while, but they kind of circle around the galactic core and don't let anyone else in there because they use these faster-than-light things which kind of tear space and you can't really get close. And then they kind of all settle down. They're like, oh, one of the factions is like, hey, let's join up to the Galactic Commons. And the Galactic Commons is like, okay, great, and we need to get a wormhole there. And they call up the Wayfarer and like, hey, will you deliver this other end of this way of this wormhole? And they're like, okay. And they're like, okay, let's go to Hedrakar is the name of the place. Hedrakar. And so begins the journey. I'm not really giving anything away. I thought it was going to be more clever than that. Like, oh, they're going to look back. But no, that's what it's set up as. And then there is like a series of very, 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 very episodic meetings with other people and incidents along the way. Almost as episodic as I would say like a 14 episode TV show, science fiction TV show. And each one of them has got like a different like specific character on the ship. Oh, this is going to be a story where Rosemary, one of our main characters, or the character that we began with, she's going to be the hero in this story. And this story is going to be about Corbin, and he's going to have his moment of revelation. And it turns out there's a reason why he's an asshole. And this is going to be about Jenks and about his love life. And now this episode, this chapter is going to be about Kizzy and about what she's going to get up to. And this one is going to be about Ashby and her and his love interest, who again a bit like Firefly, but is somebody who is not on the ship. So it's very handy to have a captain who is a lead character not to have any love interests on the ship. Again, like Firefly, it was done pretty well in that case, although the love interest did come backwards and forwards to the ship in the end. And this one is going to be about the Ohan and why he's a symbiotic and relationship. And it was remarkable how episodic it was. And then also along the way, they would meet up with these other characters who I thought, oh, at the end of the book, that all of these characters are going to play a big part again. We're all going to come back, and this one's going to be important for that one, and this one's going to be... But I was like, no, but if they're just going on a linear journey from one to another, like one place to the next place, how are they going to get back? And also, a lot of the people that they meet are kind of introduced. It's like, and then we arrive here, and we'll meet these people and meet people, and then they sit down and have a meal together, and then the chapter ends, and then they're on the way to another planet or on the way somewhere else. And I was just like, wait... We didn't, that chapter didn't seem to end. It didn't go anywhere. They just met them and hung out and learned a bit more about the universe or learned a bit more about a specific character or someone had a discussion, and then they just move on and meet up with someone else. And it got to the point where, like, there was a moment where they said, oh, and then introductions were made, you know, in a very passive voice kind of thing, which was quite a fun little word. And then, like, two chapters later, they meet up, they're on another planet and these characters meet or they're, you know, there's like another, they join up with another ship and the people from that ship come over and they're like, and then introductions were made. And I made a note, my note was like, what, again, like, are you just gonna, it's like the same scene where all of the characters from two different ships or two different groups of people, just, you know, introductions were made. And there's this great, really, really interesting feature that you get on the Kindle eBooks, which is called X-Ray. I've talked about this before in the past, and you can look at, and if I just click tap now, people, 45 people, and it's Ashby, Rosemary, Sissix, these are Kizzy, these characters on the ship itself, and they're mentioned all the way through the book. Of course they are, because they're on the ship and we spend all the time on the ship. And then there's these other characters which you meet part of the way through, like Bear and Nib, and they're mentioned there, and then they just disappear. And this is the whole point of X-Ray, is that you can see where in the book these characters are mentioned. There's a little blue line on this graph, and you can see where they're mentioned, and Bear and Nib turn up, and they're mentioned again later, but generally they're mentioned a lot in one chapter and then never turn up again. Like, and Pepper turns... Oh, she does actually turn up again at the end. And then there's someone called Ember, and Miss, and Marcus, and Tomb, and Oxlan, and Vush, and Captain Big, and Yoshi, and Bevel, and Fall, and Tesserish and Blue Suit and these other ones, and they're just mentioned, like, each one of their I'm being mentioned in the book, they're mentioned for like a thick blue line or a thin blue line in that denotes kind of one chapter. And then they just Ishwin, Huel, Mala, Ishash, Tak, Aaron, Aya, you know, all of these different names, and they just turn up and they're in one chapter, they meet them, have a conversation, generally have dinner with them, and then leave again. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but it always just made me think, like, why did we just stop there? And of course, the reason why we're stopping along to all these places along the way is because there's not enough actually happening on the ship, or there's never really enough happening to, like, propel the story forward, except to meet new people, meet new aliens, and just learn about more of the world and about more of the characters. So it turns out this book, the story is very, 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 very thin on the ground overall. But each episode, we get to know the characters a bit better. Thankfully, the characters, none of them are very offensive. All of them are okay. All of them are pretty likable. Some of them get a bit annoying, so as soon as Kizzy starts talking, I just generally skip to the end of her paragraph. And there was a few other characters where I was just like, okay, I can't be dealing with this. But generally Kizzy, because she's just too a bit too bubbly and overflowing with bubbliness. But what else have I got here? Yeah, so these episodes are about the humans, which feels very much like a TV show. And I mean, if this does get made into a TV show, I don't think it's good enough to be made into a TV show, but then there's other books which I wouldn't have thought would be good enough to be made into TV shows, which have been made into TV shows. But it would feel like, oh, you wouldn't even have to do anything. This is sort of like, this could be a 12-episode Netflix series, just literally as it is. This episode is about this character. This episode is about this character. We have a setup episode at the end, and we have a big, payoff episode. No, a big setup episode at the start, and big payoff episode at the end. And ta-da! 12 episodes on Netflix. And that kind of, like, it, to be cynical, that's what this book would be. But I do think, actually, in the end, that this just reflects what is becoming kind of almost standard storytelling in science fiction, or, you know, with space opera, sort of like, oh, and now we have a Star Trek series, and it's this episode is about this character, this episode, and then they go to this place and meet this place. So I don't think this is aiming to be a TV show. I think it's just very influenced by TV shows. I think Firefly is one of the main influences, but then a lot of the other things as well. Even to have a dwarf character. No, not a dwarf character. What do you call it? I don't know the politically correct way to say a little person, but a little person character as well. I'm just thinking, oh, that's hitting me with a Game of Thrones stick there. Yes, also, what I found weird, let me actually just look at the notes here that I have. Also along the way, we're told that it's a long way. We're going on the long way to a small angry planet. It doesn't feel like a very long way. It feels like a very short way, and we're told, oh, it's going to take a year to get there, and every chapter is called Day of, like, Galactic Standard, so it's sort of like Day 128, 129, and then it starts skipping forward, so it goes for 132 to 163 to 180, you know. So as they visit all these other places, you were meant to think that between those places that they're visiting, or between the big incidents on the ship along the way, like, weeks and weeks and weeks have passed. But it never really feels like that, because we only ever know as much about the characters that is said in the book, or, like, kind of expounded upon in the text of the book itself. Which is, you know, obviously that's true, but, like, we never really, like, there's never any kind of change of character unless something happens to change their character. There's never really anything that kind of feels like they're progressing, except when an event happens that will progress them, which is noted as it's going on in the book. You know, it's not like one character suddenly, as you're just reading, you can just pick up, oh, this character feels more sad or more happy as they go through the book. It's like, this thing happened, and that made the character feel sad, and this thing happened, it made that character feel more happy, and you're like, oh, okay, whatever. So another reason why it doesn't feel like they're going a long way isn't just because it feels like a very compressed book, that, like, one episode ends and then we skip 6 weeks and the next episode begins again. Another point is that even though they said at the beginning of the book, we're going to go quite a long way through known space, and we can take a route which isn't totally direct, and we can take a route which is kind of more comfortable because it's going to take over a year to get there, it always felt a little bit convenient that every time that they stopped, they met people that they knew. And of course, I understand that this is like actually they're stopping at those places because they know someone there. But if you're going on a long journey, like when you read these books of like science fiction, adventure and exploration, you're like casting out into the unknown and nobody knows what's going along. But the book is literally like, oh, let's go here and I'm going to hang out with my friends at this market. And then it just so happens that when we get this place, we find these people who know how to fix the ship. And then as we go here, oh, I'm literally from this planet and I'll go and meet my family. Oh, and this one, oh, I've got some friends here and they'll have some, you know, some weapons that we need and we'll just go and meet up with these people. And then at one point there's another ship that's damaged and they're like, meet up with it. It's like, oh, this is your girlfriend over here. Like, how amazingly coincidental that literally your girlfriend is on a ship and you're the closest ship. Like, in the whole of the galaxy, or the whole of this section of the galaxy, a ship breaks down and you just happen to be on the closest ship to your girlfriend when her ship breaks down. And then there's like, oh, we just go to this planet. We need like something on our freezer broke, on our food, or we need some more food. So we'll just go to this happen, which just happens to be a very, very important planet for this alien who we have on board. And when this thing is broken, oh, we can just go. And it just like time after time, it always felt like, you know, obviously they planned some of these places, but even when they didn't plan to go anywhere, it felt very, very convenient that they just happened to turn up to places which one of them knew or had friends there or just happened to be very important. And they managed to get this certain thing or that certain thing that was very important for their journey at the time. So it felt very small because we missed out all the boring parts in between. It was like they were always just turning up and meeting old friends and family members and girlfriends and boyfriends and doing all that kind of stuff. Which is not so much a criticism, but it is, I'd say, if you're going to call your book A Long Way, the long journey, if it's going to be, yeah, if the book is actually going to be the long way to a small angry planet, it's like, at least make it feel like a long way, but skipped everything that made it feel long and made everything very comfortable and very, not just comfortable, but also very, just known. Everyone knew what was going along in the way until they get to where they go at the end. And then there is this part actually where they go, from day 169 to day 214, which is, day 45 to day 121. So you're like, okay, that's a pretty good day. That's a pretty good block, like 70, 80 days between two different things happened. And then they turn up at their final destination, and it is a small planet, and it is quite angry, and something happens, and it just. But by that point, I was like, if this was what they were building up to, the payoff isn't that amazing, and it does feel like when you're watching a TV show and you have all like the character episodes, and they're like, oh shit, we've got to do that long running story episode because it's the last two episodes of the season. Quick, put in that story, and so often you're like, well, can't we just go back to them just waltzing around and having fun and meeting up with friends and family and hanging out and things like that, which, to be honest, once you actually got to the end and they're like, let's pay off this big story, this big long way to a small angry planet, let's pay it off, and you're just like, I guess that wraps up the story, and the story wraps up and I'm like, great. And so what else do I've got to say about this? Normally I talk about the science and technology, but this is the weird thing, actually. It even says here about the author. It says Becky Chambers was raised in California as the progeny of an astrobiology educator, an aerospace engineer, and an Apollo era rocket scientist. And I'm like, so does she have three parents? If so, fair enough, whatever. If they're three different things, or is that just her mother or just her father or whatever? I don't understand. But then there was some, like, I don't really mind the kind of wishy-washiness of some of the science of like, oh, what does a wormhole do? Why can't they do this? How do they get there? How far is everything away? Why do they need things? Some things delivered and some things can just turn up. That's all. Okay. That's science fiction, whatever stuff. But there was a few things that like, I was going, there was a few science things. So they say, AIs, artificial intelligence, can't be any smarter than people who create them. And that's one of those things I was like, isn't that already false? Like, don't we already make artificial intelligences that are more smart than we are? For example, the AlphaGo and DeepMind and even, you know, chess-playing computers. I was just chatting to a friend and he was like, yeah, my smartphone, my Android you know, Samsung S3, there is no human in the world who could beat this at chess if it's on the hard setting. It just isn't possible anymore. And of course, that's just one thing. But like, when they're talking about an AI who just has to navigate a ship or do this ship, I'd be like, I'm sure that's the thing. Which is fine, you know, that kind of thing. I was like, okay, in the world, they don't want AIs to be too big and too controlling it. So they just say, okay, let's just have it written in fictional baseline that they can't be more important. But then there's other things. Like they say, there's this section talking about a port Coriol, and the moon of Coriol was tidally locked, which allowed uninterrupted source of sunlight to fall upon the skins of matted scum that capped its quiet seas. The merchants and traders who kept a permanent residence on the moon often made their homes on the dark side, away from the sun and the stink. So I didn't understand this. This is a moon, and a moon is defined as a rocky body which goes around a planet, not a sun. Because if it goes around a sun, it will be a planet because it's orbiting a sun, not another planet, and that's what makes it a moon. But then it's tidally locked. I'm like, so what is it tidally locked to? Is it a moon that's tidally locked not to the planet but to the sun? Because if so, there isn't a dark side of a moon. The dark side of the moon is when you look at the moon and half of it's dark. The dark side is the dark side, but the dark side changes all the time. Like, you could say the far side of the moon, okay, the far side of the moon, or the dark side of the moon, but the dark side changes unless the moon is tidally locked to the sun. But then how can it be tidally locked to the sun if it's going around a planet? Wouldn't it be more tidally locked to the planet? So there's a few of that's just one of the things that I noticed about some of the space terminology and, the astro stuff, the cosmos stuff that I was just looking at and going, right, I don't understand how this can be working, how causality works, how orbits work, like, where is the power coming from? Why, how is it difficult to get here and there? You know, there's quite a few of these things where it was a bit fuzzy. And then when I read something like this, oh, made their homes on the dark side away from the sun. It's like, oh, well, maybe they made their homes on the dark side, but then their homes travel and always stay on the dark side. Maybe they're not homes. Maybe they're like caravans. But then I'm thinking, well, now I'm just reading too much into this. So yeah, it's a science-wise, even though the author Becky Chambers is the daughter of NASA scientists and things like that, I'm just thinking it could have done slightly better in some of these ways, just to firm that up. Do I have any other notes? Let me look at some of the notes that I have here. Oh yeah, some of the things, like I say, I don't mind it being a bit hand-wavy on sort of hand-waving some stuff away, but sometimes it was hand-waved away very conveniently. It's sort of like at one point where they just say, we simply don't have enough data, and the data that we do possess is still beyond our understanding. I can't remember exactly what they're talking about at this note. Oh yeah, it's in one of those big info dumping things. Oh yeah, it's about all these aliens and how all these aliens, they all have, you know, DNA and they all breathe oxygen and they all can get on well. It's like, well, why is this so? How can this work? Well, we just don't understand it yet. And I'm like, okay, that's fun that you, as the people in the novel, don't understand it. But it would have been nice to have the author to, well, it doesn't need to be explained. But if it's not going to be explained, how about just not bring it up to say, oh, I can't do this. Oh yeah, it's Mr. Crisp. Is like Mr. Universe on Firefly, but then again, it might have those names mixed up. Oh, and also, this is all the action is set on this ship, and I am on a ship at the moment. It is a cruise ship. I spend quite a lot of my life on cruise ships, as that is what I do as a job. I work on cruise ships as an entertainer, as a juggler, which is fun. So I see kind of things happening on ships. Now, there are things that happen on ships which are in preparation of things which don't happen very often. For example, when I get on the ship, I have to have a safety briefing. Every week there is a major drill by the crew, and generally every day there is drills of the crew in case of emergency of this, in case of emergency of that. When we go around part of, like, the Gulf of Aden and going around, you know, down through the Red Sea, there's all these drills about what happens if pirates come aboard and go all, you know, and then they have, like, these non-lethal weapons and they have these spotlights and hose pipes and all these different kind of things. Like, just as a person who isn't even a sailor, I just happen to work on ships, I see all of these different things that are set up in case of very rare emergencies. And whenever they do do a drill. They even say to the passengers, like on the announcement, in the very unlikely case of a real emergency, we will do this and this and this. This is a drill, but we always do it for the unlikely case of an emergency. Now, on this ship, emergencies happen, including pirates, and they're just totally, like, at all times, it's like the first time it's ever been happened to them, and it's always the first time they've ever even thought about it. Like, oh, this has happened. Oh, what should we do? Oh, I guess, well, someone called up. Like, who's on the bridge? Nobody's ever on the bridge. Like, for loads of times, I was like, what does the captain do if the captain isn't the main watchkeeper? If he's not there just hanging out, waiting for things to happen? Like, what is he doing otherwise? The captain never seems to be doing anything. Like, multiple times in the book, other people call, and he's not on the bridge, so other people just pick up the phone and go, okay. Don't wake him up, or they actually, like even say, oh, let's surprise him with this one. It's like, no, don't surprise the captain with by armed people turning up. Even if you think they're friends, even though you've been boarded by pirates before, and then other armed people call up and say, hey, can we just come aboard with all our armament and with all our stuff? Like, with all our weapons and stuff, can we just come aboard? And they're like, yeah, come aboard. We won't tell the captain. Just come aboard. Sneak aboard with all your mercenaries and stuff like that. Everything will be all right. Yeah, it'll be great. Just come aboard. And so at one point there's the captain who is a pacifist. And they were boarded by pirates, and then they're like, hey, we should get some weapons. And I'm like, yeah, no shit, you should get some weapons. He's like, well, not weapons, how about just some shields? And he's like, well, maybe not shields, because he's a pacifist. He goes, I've been flying all my life, and that's never happened to me before. Being boarded by pirates, he means. I'm not filling my home with weapons just because we're feeling shaken up. And it's like, the whole point of being on a ship and having different drills and safety drills and all this other kind of stuff is because it very, very rarely happens, but you have to be prepared for it. And it was just amazing to read about life on a ship where everybody is just totally unprepared at all times, and everyone just has to just think on their feet at all times. It's like nobody has ever flown a ship through space where there might be pirates before. You think, like, the first people to ever be boarded, and they even say, oh yeah, we heard about this thing that when we get a package that's delivered, the pirates follow the packages that are being delivered, and then they board your ship and they follow the packages in. And I'm like, so you know about this? And even then, there is literally no protocols about what might happen, and no plans, no protocols. So yeah, it's quite funny seeing all of this stuff. There's a few things. There's a few clunky story things as well. Like, for example, at one point, people are just sitting around and suddenly like, oh, normally I watch the news at this time of the afternoon. I was like, oh, do you? I wonder if just this one time where these other people just happen to be in a place where they're going to watch you move, do you think there's going to be some massive life-changing news that comes on, which is just going to, like, you know, change the story in this way or set another character off in this other dimension? And they put the news on, and the first big story was like, oh, yes. And I was like, yep, couldn't see that one coming. At the start of the thing, there's one of the people on the ship never eats with the other people. And they're like, oh, but we always leave his chair in case he wants to come and eat dinner with us one time. And I'm like, I bet you anything, in the last chapter, or the second to last chapter, this character is going to come and eat dinner with them. And it's like, there we go. And there's a few other notes that I made throughout the book, which is like, yep, there you go, which is, it wasn't bad. It was just a little bit clunky, a bit obvious what was going on there. Sometimes it did get a bit repetitive. Like, someone was like, oh, then I had a shower and I'm only allowed 15 minutes in the shower, but I'm going to give myself 22 minutes in the shower. Extra 7 minutes won't mean anything. And then a bit later, you're like, oh, and this person, oh, I'm only allowed 15 minutes in the shower, but I'm going to have 24 minutes in the shower because nobody's going to mind those extra 9 minutes of water that I use. I'm like, didn't we just read this? And that happened a few times throughout the book. Like, it felt like someone had just, like, almost copied and pasted something from beforehand. I think that's about it. I don't have anything to say. I've gone through all of my notes. Actually, let me just check the notes in the book. Any bookmarks that I made? No, I can't see anything as well. So overall, this book was fine. It's not great. The story is almost non-existent, but I actually quite liked the episodic storytelling and just the characters and doing this and doing that and doing this, and they're fine characters, and that's it. So I'm going to give this book 2.5 stars, which means totally average. It's not a great recommendation. I'm not going to say everyone should go out and read it, but also I'm not going to say nobody should read it. I'm not going to actively discourage anyone from reading this. Not really my kind of thing, but I knew that going in, and what I got, I was like, oh, well, that was a book. If there was another book and people said, oh, this one's actually got a real story, I'd probably read it because it's fun, space opera kind of stuff, which is fine. It's fine. Yeah, that's it. You can follow me on Goodreads and recommend books to me there. And I can also see what you were reading, but I'm at sea, so I don't have internet connection at the moment. So I can't see what other people thought of this book immediately here on Goodreads. If you want, you can also email me at luke@juggler.net, and I do reply to every single email that I get. Thanks a lot for everyone who gives feedback there and comments that they are enjoying the podcast. That's really great. If you want, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Luke Burridge there. I don't post very much, which is good because I won't be overflowing your Twitter feed. And I do post about new episodes of the Science Fiction Book Review podcast every single time that I upload when I post it about it there on Twitter. And also, you can check me out on Instagram. I just signed up to Instagram a few weeks ago, which is I'm really enjoying. And if you want to see photos of what I get up to on a daily basis, one or two photos per day, generally one per day is what I've been keeping it down to. And you can see where I'm up to in my travels and in my life and in whatever's happening. That's it. So thanks a lot for listening, and I'll catch you next time.